Hey there, this is Kevin from the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, and I have something new for you. We're launching a brand new podcast, and this is it. It's the DIY Musician Stories Podcast, hosted by Monty Carty. This will have a similar indie vibe that you're used to from the DIY Musician Podcast, but it will solely focus on musicians and their stories, stories of struggle and success. And it'll dive into topics more about their music and artistic expression. In order to introduce you to this new podcast, we're putting the first few episodes down the DIY Musician Podcast feed. So that's why you're hearing this right now. So if you're liking this new podcast and what you're hearing, you'll want to be sure to subscribe to this directly. All you have to do is search DIY Musician Stories wherever you listen to podcasts and hit that subscribe button. Don't worry, the DIY Musician Podcast that you've known and loved for years is still going strong, but now you have two podcasts to listen to and enjoy. With all that said, here's the DIY Musician Stories Podcast, hosted by Monty Carty.
Mary Gaucher is a Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter who has struck a balance between her own artistry and penning songs for singers such as Blake Shelton and Jimmy Buffett. In this episode, Mary talks about the transformative power of songwriting to heal trauma while discussing her songcraft and her forthcoming memoir, Saved by a Song. If you're a songwriter or want to be, this episode is a must listen. Oh, well, how has quarantine been for you, like, you know, as a musician during this time? You said you're doing live streams, so you're still kind of, you've been able to pivot, but like, how has it been?
Yeah, we've pivoted. We've been able to sort out doing live streams, bringing guests on to StreamYard with us. And so every Sunday we do a show at 2, and I bring in a friend that's a songwriter. And I've been teaching songwriting workshops online. Oh. Which has been a real cool thing, because people can jump on from all over the world and be in the retreat. Well, it's not really a retreat; it's more of a master class that I'm doing on Zoom. So I did 4, and they went so well. I'm gonna do 4 more, and if they go well, I'm gonna do the first 4 again. I'm limiting the size to about 20 people.
Yeah.
So it's not this big, huge 100 people thing. And I love it. It's really, really fun for me. And I think I'm truly able to help songwriters, which is also fun.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I want to hear a little bit more about your songwriting teaching, because I was so, so inspired and just moved, really, when I heard your story about working with soldiers and their spouses on the co-writes and all that. And so I want to get into that, but maybe before we do, can you tell me, like, describe yourself, like, who you are beyond being a musician?
Yeah, that's expanding since the shutdown. I mean, for the longest time, I was a musician, and that was about it. All I did was write songs, make records, and tour. You know, I would describe myself as a troubadour, you know, an old school troubadour, road dog. 150, 170 shows a year, every year. If you build in travel days, that's 300 days on the road every year.
Wow.
This year was going to be the same until the shutdown. I'm also an author. I just completed a book for St. Martin Press. It is called Saved by a Song. And I go into the work with veterans and the notion of songs as being more than just entertainment. If they were just entertainment, that would be fine, but they are also more. And so the work that I've done on my own recovery and dealing with childhood trauma through songwriting taught me and showed me some of the ways which songs can be used that are beneficial beyond entertainment. And then when I had the opportunity to work with veterans, I really got to see the power of song in relation to trauma healing. So I put some of that stuff in the book. So I'm an author.
Oh, I can't wait to read it. Do you know the release date?
Yeah, August 21.
Oh, that's so exciting. Is it a memoir or is it, you tell me what it is.
Thank you for asking. Yes, it is a memoir. It's a memoir combined with a songwriting, an exploration of songwriting. And also I threw in some philosophy of art. What is art for?
Yeah.
What do we need it for? What is it best at? And I go deep into why songs really truly matter beyond entertainment. And so, author, and I'm also really into gardening now. I've learned how I'm passionate about it. The first thing I do in the morning and the last thing I do at night is go out to my garden and check on everybody, see what they need. We got so much going on back there. It's incredible. I've never been home for a whole season before. Yeah. So I've got all kind of stuff growing back there, and it's a delight for me.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, it's a perfect quarantine activity.
It really is. And I can see how alive the plants are and how how much they change day to day. And of course, we're changing every day too, but we don't see it the way you can see it in a tomato or a zucchini or a Brussels sprouts or bay leaves. But my goodness, we're all in transformation too. So it's a great metaphor for life, and watching it every day grow and change has been good for me.
Oh, that's awesome. Uh-huh. I'm also just want to circle back to, I'm so excited that you wrote this book, because as I was listening to some of your other interviews, I was so moved and touched by many things you said that I just, wrote them down right away, because it really like struck a chord in me, and I had heard it said by you in a way I hadn't heard it said before. And I think you're just meant to get that message out more widely beyond your music. So I'm really excited that you have this book coming out.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I feel called to it. I feel called to this conversation. I'm really passionate about it.
Oh, that's so great. You said something, so if you don't mind, I want to mention a couple of things that I heard you say that really moved me. You said, my emotional reality is in songs. And I really paused on that because I think when you really think about it, there have been times in my life, and I'm sure everybody's lives, when I felt sort of numb to my own, pain. And then I hear a song and it'll suddenly just cut through me and like hit that most vulnerable spot inside of me. And then the emotion is released. It may be like, because I start sobbing or I just understand what I'm going through in a different way that I didn't before. And when I heard you say that, I really wanted to talk to you more about that. So what does that mean to you? My emotional reality is in songs.
It's a great, great question. I think one of the powerful, powerful things that songs do or can do is create empathy. Mm-hmm. And so with empathy, we can really see ourselves in each other. And there's this bridge that is built, that we become the other for the duration of the song, and the walls come down, and we realize that in spite of differences that have been pitched as important, Republican, Democrat, black, white, gay, straight, what's true is that on the spiritual, emotional plane, we're made of the same, exact same stuff. So by emotional reality, I think what I'm saying is human beings deal with the same emotions across every single barrier that we've been convinced through this internalized belief system that was imposed on us, really, that we're different. Songs remind us we're not. And I think that's powerful. And also for me, sometimes I don't even know how or what I'm feeling. I can't name it.
Yeah.
And a song comes along and just just stops me in my tracks and tells me who I am. It brings me to my reality and articulates for me what I couldn't do for myself.
Yes.
And that's the job of the songwriter, and that's a big, big job. Because if you're checked out all the time, you don't know what you feel all the time, and you're living in this altered reality that's been sold to you around dualities, that you're either this or that. You're either black or white. You're either gay or straight. You're either Catholic or Muslim or Jew or Hindu or Christian or you're either Democrat or Republican, or you're either all those things. You lose track with what we really are and who you really are. And so I think songs can bring us into a place of connection with ourself that is reality based. And then big picture, and this is my hope and my dream and my desire, is that songs bring us back into connection with each other.
Yeah.
But I think we're suffering from so much self-disconnectedness that's where we have to start. Being connected to each other is the next level of the work. Getting reconnected to ourself is the first let's just call it wave of reality that songs brought to me. They connected me back to myself. What happens with traumatic events, especially childhood trauma, is you, in order to survive, adapt, and through the adaptation process, you learn to not feel, or to not know what you feel, or to listen to someone else telling you how you feel and just going, okay, I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a complex conversation, but it's really one worth having. And I think songs can ground us and anchor us in our emotional reality.
Absolutely. I also have heard you say that you lived much of your life feeling lonely. I think a lot of artists have had that feeling, and maybe music or whatever the art is like where they turn to help explore that and fill that. So I'd love to hear from you, like how did you feel that loneliness in your life and get to where you are now?
Yeah, there's a lot of kinds of loneliness, just like there's a lot of kinds of love. And some loneliness is necessary for the creative process. I've got to have downtime and a little bit of isolation and removal to be creative, to write songs and to write the book. That kind of loneliness I use as a incentive to create. And there's loneliness that comes from childhood trauma, from pain, that I think of as cosmic loneliness, which is the kind of loneliness I never really knew what to do with.
Yeah.
That also drove me to songs and songwriting. And I learned as a songwriter that I can go into the work and articulate that kind of loneliness with music. Music can go in, melody and music can go in where words can't get to. And I can go, this is how I feel, and play it and look out and see if anybody relates to that, which helps with that kind of loneliness, pre-verbal or the kind of loneliness where words just aren't accessible. But I think that loneliness kind of gets a bad rap. I think it's okay to be lonely. I think loneliness is a great incentive for artists and creative types. I think solitude is confused a lot of times with loneliness.
Yeah.
I think solitude is necessary for the creative process. It's probably necessary to heal all different kinds of of hurts and wounds too, is to sit with the pain sometimes and mm-hmm. and ask it what it's trying to teach me. But I think ultimately loneliness for me requires some questions, like what kind of loneliness am I dealing with?
Yeah.
Some loneliness will drive you to making really bad decisions just to get rid of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's certainly, I think I became a drug addict and an alcoholic because I was lonely. Mm-hmm. And I've had to learn how to deal with those feelings and put the drugs and alcohol down and see what's behind all that, and learning how to create connections with people. Instead of medicating the pain. I mean, again, that's a really, really big discussion and a big question.
Yeah. When it sounds like that you turned to music in your mid-30s. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got sober when I was 27.
Wow. And so in a sense, if I don't want to put words in your mouth, but tell me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you originally were filling that hole, that loneliness, with, you know, drugs and then, or alcohol, and then you switched to music. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Wow.
And plan B is a far better plan.
Yeah. It's good that you got to plan B, because a lot of people don't, you know?
I know. And a lot of people don't understand that the music can be the plan B. An awful lot of artists overdose and die, and their music was never a part of their recovery.
Yeah.
And they never figured out how to attach the two in a way that is transformative.
Yeah.
And so I'm very lucky that I think that I started I started music later, and so I was able to connect recovery with creativity from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. And I think it's really inspiring to hear your story on many levels. But I was also going to say that I'm in my late 30s, and I've just begun recently really diving into my writing. I'm not a songwriter yet, but I write prose, and I feel like I see around me, a lot of people think that once they're like past a certain age, it's too late to get started into something, which of course isn't true, but it's a story people like to tell themselves. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what it was like for you. I mean, mid-30s is still young, but, you know, like I was saying, like a lot of people are in their 20s and they're like, oh, it's too late to start, you know, doing this, whatever it is. So talk to me a little bit about starting to really dive into music at that age. And then now you're also becoming a new author too. So like, that's really great and inspiring to show that, like, you know, you can have different turns in your life. It doesn't have to look the entire life one way.
Absolutely. I didn't move to Nashville to become a professional songwriter and quit my day job till I was 40.
Mm.
And I'm 58 now, so I'll be 59 when the book comes out. So
yeah.
Just to round it up and make it sound cool, I'll be 60 when my first book comes out.
Yeah.
That is entirely possible and utterly doable. I mean, what you can't do at 40 is be a pop star.
Right.
But that was never my goal. I was always, always interested in adult songs. I was always interested in songs as literature and as I take songwriting as seriously as, you know, Flannery O'Connor took fiction. I really never was interested in the star trip. I was interested in songs and songwriting as a form of expression that is for lack of a better word, a genuine art form.
Yes.
Not that pop music isn't. Of course it is. But it is for the young. You can't really get started at that at 40 and expect it to happen, although it might for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience was I just wanted to go into the folk listening rooms. My deal was, I figured if I get 100 people to pay $20 to see me in every major Western city, mm-hmm. including Europe, United States, Canada, Europe, I'd have a career. That has proven to be true. A doable and achievable goal. And the same with writing this book. I'm very lucky to be with one of the big five in New York City. The big publishing deal is incredible, especially to have my first book come out that way at my age, and have this big chance to make my mark as an author.
Yeah.
I think you set realistic goals and, you just chisel away at it. If you're, did you say you're in your early 30s?
Late 30s.
Yeah. And you want to really, really become a writer. You'll really, really become a writer.
Mm.
There's no age attached to great writing.
Totally.
Nobody sends you a questionnaire when they want to publish something in a magazine or
right.
even a book. How old are you? What they want to know is, are you saying something that resonates deeply with people and makes them enter, back to it, their emotional reality in large enough numbers that they're going to pay for your work.
Yeah.
And so that's the goal. And so I think it's the important, for me anyway, the important work is around learning the craft and being brave.
Yes.
By that, I mean, I've got to be vulnerable and write things that not everybody can write and not everybody can even articulate. I got to be vulnerable.
Yeah, I wanted to everything you just said was so beautifully put. So thank you. I wanted to talk to you about vulnerability in art, which is one of my favorite topics. And I've been thinking about this a lot because as I've been writing a lot, I haven't shared a lot of my work with larger public. It's been mostly smaller circles of like writing class and whatnot. But what I've noticed, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this with your own writing, is the more specific I am about my story and my vulnerability, the more it resonates.
Yep.
You know, even, yeah. It's because you think sometimes like, oh, no one's going to care about this very specific thing that happened to me. But then it's the opposite. It's
yep.
actually, yeah. Yeah. So I'd love to hear anything you think about that.
Yep. That's what I teach when I teach songwriting. It's exactly what I teach. It's that the very specific, deeply personal is universal. And we don't talk about deeply personal anywhere in our culture. We surely don't talk about it at the cocktail party, at the bar,
right.
at church. I mean, we do in the 12-step meetings where I live. And I get a lot of songs and song ideas from the recovery meetings, but that's the only place I know of anywhere where it's socially acceptable to talk about the deeply personal. Mm-hmm. Way, way down inside of us, all the way to the core, the essence of our own experience is where we meet everyone.
Yes.
Guy Clark, a songwriting hero of mine, I used to open for him before he passed away, and he said, well, basically, everybody's pretty much living the same life. We just hit the marks at different times.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Hollywood. There's only, what they say, 11 movies?
Right, right.
We're all having this human experience, and the people whose writing we're really drawn to are the ones who are willing to reveal the deeply personal,
yes.
which transcends journal writing big time.
Yeah.
It's way down beyond... He has a crush on me. I don't know if I'm brave enough to call him. It's way deeper than, I'm pissed at my mother. It goes,
yeah.
it goes, the elevator's 10 more floors lower than that. And boom, there's universal.
Yeah.
So yeah. And you got to get that universal into your writing, whatever form the writing takes for people to see themselves there. And that's really the goal, is not to express myself, but to, for you to see yourself in my writing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And your songs are so deeply honest. So you're really doing that. And it's just what you were saying. I remember I had a piece that I wrote about this short relationship that I had that was just heartbreaking for me. And I was talking to, or I shared it with a writing class, and my teacher said, this piece is nothing to do. It's not about this guy. You know, it's about something so much deeper. And he really got me to really dive into that. Like, what is this actually about? It's actually about something I'm going through internally. It has nothing to do with this other person. And just, yeah, I think that's what, in doing that searching. And I actually heard you say this, and I wrote it down because it, wow. You said the truth, you're talking about songwriting, and you said, and I'm not remembering the context exactly, but you said the truth that is underneath all the almost truths. And wow, yes, because there's so often, and we're talking or writing or however we're expressing ourselves, we're sort of like maybe unconsciously like circling around the real truth of the matter, right? So yeah, I guess that was a long-winded way of asking you this, but how did you, when you started writing music, did you start from that place of just the raw truth, or did it take you a while to get there?
It took me a while to get there. It took me a while to understand, first of all, the craft of songwriting. Mm-hmm. But then I had to understand what it was that a song could do. What is inherent in the art form, and where is the most power in the art form? And for me, it's resonance. So how do I make my song resonate with people when I sing my song to you? And so I had, a couple of years of playing open mics and learning how to connect. And to further complicate the discussion, I learned that oftentimes the best way to get to the truth is a lie. With fiction, for example, fiction teaches us about life, but it's teaching us about life through a story that didn't actually happen. But it's lying mm-hmm. for a reason. The fiction writer makes up the story to show us our humanity, and the great ones all do that. And so art is a lie that points to the truth, is what I teach. And so it's not about getting the objective facts down, like as if I was swearing on a Bible in a courtroom.
Right.
It's about, once again, what you brought up at the beginning of the conversation, is accessing the emotional reality.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And were you when you first started out, were you nervous at all, like performing in front of other people, or did that come pretty naturally to you?
Terrified forever.
Really?
I was so scared for so long. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, just terrified. It took me forever.
But you got through it.
Well, I ended up having to just wear it out. I mean, when I work with artists who have stage fright, I tell them the only thing I know, which is sooner or later, when the stage fright realizes you're going to do it anyway, it starts to get tired. And it gets smaller and smaller when it realizes it's not going to stop you.
Oh, that's great. How did you get into, I want to take one of your songwriting classes. I'm so excited. It sounds amazing. And how did you get into that? Was it through your work with veterans and their spouses, or did that come first, or did the songwriting teaching come before that?
Well, I don't really remember. I think I got asked to teach at a folk festival called the Rocky Mountain Folk Festival up in Lyons, Colorado. They have the Folks Festival, and they do the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. And they have
that's through Sally Truett, right?
Yeah, exactly.
She is my aunt's high school best friend.
Oh, a small world.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
And they have a song school where 170 something songwriters come to the song school, and it's a week before the festival. And in conjunction with being invited to play that wonderful festival, I guess it was 15 years ago now, they asked me if I would teach, and I said, I'll try. I don't know if I know how, but I'll give it my best. And that was the beginning. And I've been teaching there every summer since. And then other festivals started asking me if I'd teach at their festival, the Calgary folk festival up in Canada, and a festival in Perth, Scotland, and then Kerrville Folk Festival. And then my friends started asking me if I would come to their retreats and be a guest teacher. And it grew to where I started doing my own workshops about 10 years ago. Mm. And it's one of my favorite things that I do is work with songwriters and really, you know, teach the two things I think I really want to get across in my work with songwriters is, one, if you're called to be a songwriter, first you need to understand that not everybody on earth is called to be a songwriter. There's probably a reason for it.
Right.
And that calling is there to help you in some way. It's not a malicious calling. It's a benevolent calling. It wants to help you with your life and maybe even help you to help other people with their life. When people feel as though their voice doesn't matter and what they have to say isn't important, I see my job as a teacher is to point them back to the calling and go, you got to believe that calling. You got to trust it. I do.
Yeah.
I trust that you're called for a reason. And you may not feel worthy, but spirit moves through unworthy vessels all the time.
Mm.
We are human and are going to always wonder if we're up to the task. But I encourage my students to just humbly show up for the work, give it your greatest effort, and let it go. And then get back to the blank page and do it again.
That's beautiful.
So I love working with songwriters and telling them the truth, which is if you're called, your voice matters, and there is something there that's asking you to do work for it.
Yeah.
I don't believe in the direct intervention of spirit in this world. I think we're asked to do the work. Mm. And that's what inspiration is.
Yeah. And it's also just pointed at something that's an important truth. And, you know, working as a songwriter, as an artist of any kind, really, it's, you're going to face lots of roadblocks and challenges. And, you know, it's very rarely just handed to you. You have to like really believe enough in what you're doing that's important enough to you to keep on going. And I think, like you said, if you have that call to do it, then you should be doing it. But can you maybe share a time in your life, either preferably maybe in your music life, when something didn't, you know, go the way you like, you didn't get what you really wanted, but then something better ended up coming in its place?
Oh, that happens all the time.
Yeah,
that's part of the deal, is being able to sit through the pain of rejection and sit through the self-doubt that comes with rejection and get back to work and then see over time why that rejection happened. You know, I've been turned down so many times by so many people, it's hard to nail down one, but always something else comes along that's a better fit.
Yes, yes.
That rejection was a gift.
Yeah.
I think our job as artists, I always use this imagery of there's 10 doors in front of us. We got to knock on all 10. 9 of them are not going to open. One of them is going to open, and we walk through it, and what we see is 10 doors. And you just keep knocking. If you only have the courage to knock on 2 doors, you're never going to be a successful artist. You got to knock on all 10.
Yes.
And know that 9 are going to just either slam in your face, laugh in your face, or just ignore you. That's not unique. That's every artist goes through that.
Yeah.
Key is to keep knocking. And when one opens, you walk through it and it leads to the next set of doors. Always, always.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that so beautifully. I think it's, you know, any artist knows this, but I think we often forget it when, you know, like even in the writing world where I've had a friend who, you know, got rejected by an agent, or not an agent, a publisher for one of her books. And, you know, I told her a story about another writer I know who was rejected by this thing she wanted so badly, but then she got something in its place that was so much better. And I love sharing those stories, you know, because I just think it's easy to forget it, that like you are not alone in that. Like everybody goes through that if you're an artist. So yeah, the key is to keep persisting.
Yeah, everybody goes through it.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you. Thank you for expressing that.
The thing is that people don't post that shit on Instagram.
Exactly, exactly.
So that's why I'm like, let's talk about it. Yeah. You know, I just got blown off by Warner Brothers. Mm. You know, I just got rejected by, this publisher that I thought I belonged. I wrote a book. I had a gentleman from Yale University who ran Yale University Press come to a show that I played in Connecticut, and he came to the table after and he said, "I've been watching you for a while and I want you to write a book for Yale University Press." And I was beside myself excited. I always wanted to be an author. Mm. And I thought, my God, you get to start at Yale? That's unbelievable. It didn't work out. I wrote him a book and it never got published. He moved on from Yale and went to a different press, and the people left at Yale weren't into my book. It just never happened. And I kind of put it on a back burner. And for 3 years, I thought maybe I'm not supposed to write a book. And then I got asked by a friend, "What's going on with that book?" I said, "Well, it just kind of fell through." She goes, I know this person at St. Martin's. You want me to hook you up?" And within 48 hours, I had a real book deal.
And wow.
That's kind of, you know, a blessing that it didn't come out at University Press with the,
yes,
you know, the tight box that Yale has to operate under. I'm not an educator in a formal sense. I don't even know what key I'm in 90% of the time. I'm not a trained musician. I don't have the language of music down as like someone who went to Juilliard or went to any music school. I'm intuitive and I work from the gut.
Yeah.
And that's just not what Yale's about.
Right.
I'm not a scholar and I can't write a scholarly book. And that's really what they wanted. And the book I wrote for them, when I look at it now, I thank God it never got published because it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And this book I'm writing now, that's coming out in August of 21, is me.
Oh, that's so great.
Right.
Yeah. I love that story. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's,
you're welcome.
That's great. Yeah. That's,
I mean, good. The ego wanted Yale so bad.
Yeah.
Because I quit college and I quit high school and I'd be like, "I am smart. Look at this. Yale University Press." Well, you know, the ego is not the best pilot.
Yeah.
You know, if you let the ego fly the plane, you're going to end up in trouble.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness. Yes. And I love the story that you ended up, you know, now it's going to reach more people and it's going to be more true to your voice, the book. So that's super exciting.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You have said before that songs let us know we're not alone, which is so true. And I'm wondering if you can think of an artist that has made you feel less alone in this life.
Oh, gosh, almost all of the artists you can think of, from painters, Van Gogh, you know, fiction writers, essayist, Baldwin.
Mm, yes.
Okay.
I just read Sonny's Blues for the first time, and oh my goodness.
Oh man, Baldwin. I wish he was alive to see what's happening today.
I know. I keep thinking about that.
I hope he's looking down. I hope his spirit is able to, to tap into to some of these horrific statues being pulled off their platforms and people staring at that blank platform and meditating on the meaning of that.
Yes.
I hope his spirit feels that. You know, Jeanette Winterson, I love her writing so much. There's so many, it's impossible. Kurt Vonnegut, John Irving, Herman Hesse, of course, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Lucinda Williams, Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. And some of the great artists of our time are my friends, that they're not super famous, but they're really, really good. They're really, really good. Fred Eaglesmith, David Olney, Malcolm Holcomb, my friend Lori McKenna. I could go probably and name 1,000 people.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. That was going to be my second question, is if there are any lesser known artists that you really love.
So many.
So many. Yeah, yeah.
I'm able to bring a lot of my friends that aren't as well known onto my live stream every Sunday at 2 Central.
Oh.
So you'll be seeing a lot of them as we go forward during this time.
Oh, great.
That we're not on the road.
There have been some silver linings to all this, you know, and to be able to do things like that. And, you know, in theory, you're going to reach more people by being able to do it on live stream versus like a show here and there. So that's really cool. I was going to ask you, just back to the idea of just like, you know, feeling things in song and listening to song that you didn't have access to in yourself until you heard that song. I remember this one song in college that my friend played me, and it unleashed something inside of me, and I had this like oversized reaction to it where I just cried and cried and cried, and I felt so much better after. And I'm wondering if, like, can you recall a time when that's happened to you? Maybe you don't have to say it like you cry, but like something that really, like, you listened to a specific song and it just really like opened something up inside.
Yeah, the two chapters in my book that's coming up are about song wrapped around songs I didn't write. One of them is Sam Stone. It's the John Prine song about the Vietnam veteran who came back and became a heroin addict and had a tragic death. And that song really grabbed me, and I used to play it to Vietnam veterans in the parking lot of a bar in Baton Rouge. And it was long before I got sober, and it taught me the power of what a song can do. I watched those guys, tough guys, they're bikers, big, tough guys back from Vietnam, would just show themselves when I played Sam Stone. It was incredible. And I learned about songs and songwriting from that song more than any song anywhere.
Wow.
The song Mother, John Lennon, helped me onto a path that led to a song cycle I wrote called The Foundling, which goes into my own personal story around spending the first year of my life in an orphanage and being adopted and not even knowing that had an impact on me in any way. I had to dig that up as a 48-year-old. Nobody told me that I was traumatized. I had no idea. Ooh. So that song, Mother, opened the door to my healing.
Wow. I can't wait to read more about that in your book. I've brought it up a couple times, and so have you, but could you tell people listening who don't already know about your work with veterans and their spouses, like, tell me about how that came about and what the process is like?
Yeah, I was invited to be a participant in a nonprofit called Songwriting with Soldiers. And what the nonprofit does is pair 4 professional songwriters with 6 to 8 wounded veterans. And we go to a retreat center for a weekend, Friday, Saturday, and half a Sunday. And the songwriters bear witness to the veteran's story, and we turn their story into a song. And I did that for 5 or 6 years. And came up with this, I guess, almost 50 songs. And I realized, gosh, these are really good songs. I want to make a record of these. And the program graciously allowed me to do so. And the record's called Rifles and Rosary Beads. And we got nominated for a Grammy for the best folk record 2 years ago. So it's been incredible for me. And I've just fallen in love with the power of song and the way that the songs connect me to our veterans.
Yeah. It's incredible hearing the story about the war after the war that was written. Well, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's written with veterans' wives, with 6 military spouses. When I sat with them, what they were telling me was that they have to live with the wounds as much as their husbands do. Mm. And what I heard them say is there's a war after the war and nobody's taking care of us. We feel invisible. Mm. And so this is articulating their journey in their words for the most part. Certainly it's their emotional reality. And yeah, that song is one of the songs that I think it got the most attention from the Rifles and Rosary Beads records because people don't understand what veteran spouses are going through.
Yeah.
And Malcolm Gladwell picked it as his favorite song of 2019.
Wow. I can see why. It's such a powerful song.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning it.
Who's going to care for the ones who care for the ones who went to war? There's landmines in the living shells on the floor. I lost myself in the shadow of your honor and your pain. You stare out of the window as our dreams go down the drain. Invisible. The war after the war.
I just want to ask, you know, what are you, this is a weird time, but what are you feeling most excited about?
I think culturally, in ways we can't measure yet, we're in a time of deep change.
Yes.
And on the other side of it, I think things are gonna be different because things are always different. But I think we're on an accelerated platform right now. I think we're moving more towards justice. I think we're moving more towards just smashing the binary. The binary is a lie. Non-binary thinking leads to liberation. Where it's not either or. That's a lie that was created by people in power to separate people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I love the non-binary gender movement.
Mm-hmm.
I love the discussion around a race right now, and acknowledging the reality of the depths of racism in our country, and I hope we come out the other side with some version of the South African truth and reconciliation process. So we need to get to reality around this, and we need to do something to change the way that we treat each other. And we're not going to do that till we acknowledge what we've done and what we are doing. So I think my hope is that we're coming out of it. We're coming out of 2020, which coincided with the COVID. With change as the big word.
Yes.
My hope is that transformation occurs. My fear is that it's not going to occur without violence.
Mm.
And so I'm afraid there will be violence around this election. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm afraid. And I worry that as the temperature goes up around the election and the misinformation and disinformation, people are going to get so heated that there's going to be violence. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But I think it's an incredible time to be alive. And I think it's an incredible time to be a writer, to be a songwriter, to be an artist, because we have the power to build bridges that reconnect people that have been disconnected by the lies of the power elite. I think we can reconnect people.
Yeah, that's lovely. I'm holding on to all that hope too. So yeah, thank you for all that you do and for this wonderful conversation. I'm super excited to get it out, but I really cherished it personally too. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, we'll talk soon, I hope.
It's a wonderful conversation. Your questions are so intelligent and engaging. I can't believe an hour just went by.
I know, me too. Thank you for those kind words. But me too. I feel like I could keep talking to you all day, but I'll give you some time back. We'll pick this up back up over coffee when all COVID is all over.
It will be my great pleasure, and I wish you tremendous success with your writing.
Thank you, and I really can't wait to read your book.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.